in the amount of research I was able to do before you arrived, I learned that you were born in Baltimore on July 28, 1915, and I was wondering if we could begin by just talking about your family background and your childhood.
Okay. You're recording?
It is recording,
My father was born in New York City, the second son of immigrants, family of five, and in typical immigrant tradition, the oldest son was sent to college to study medicine, and the other children had to go to work to support him and the family, so my father went to work at the age of 16 in construction work, and was essentially self-educated, but very literate, learned all read. And of course, pushed myself and my brother 3 years younger than me for education. He was an early nutritionist. He said, "Have an apple every day, keep the doctor away, drink lots of tomatoes and tomatoes, they're wonderful for you." He was way ahead of his time in that score. Everyone drank a lot of milk. So my brother and I were quite healthy that way. My father said he lived to 96. Until he was 77, he was active in construction as a piping foreman.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, came to Philadelphia. The 12th child of a family which was a widow and widower, married, one had five, one had six. She was the only child of that union.
Oh.
And so she had sisters and brothers, much, much older than she was, and much of the family lived around Philadelphia, Atlantic City. And once a month, we take the excursion train to New York City, where we lived most of that time, to Philadelphia to visit the family. And frankly, I got tired of visiting cousins by the dozens. My memory of Philadelphia youngster were not that good. That was the days of the Chinese Wall, and you took trolley cars, not many people. And present one cousin had a policy car, it was quite unique, an innovation. So that's how far back I go, early 1920s. As far as my pre-college education, I said being brought up in construction, and suddenly I was a pipe fitter helper before I was an engineer. I started taking materials off to work with my father when I was 10 years old. And then I started so I could working permit to work in construction, plumbing, and piping. So I was going to be an engineer, and probably a civil engineer, to build things. I was in the New York City educational system, and fortunately, they were going through grammar school and with a rapid advance, middle school, 3 years and two. I selected Dewitt Clinton High School, which was a very interesting school, 10,000 boys only.
Wow.
And two courses. One was essentially trades training, the other was college preparatory. And so I entered the college preparatory, and it was an excellent school for all things math, science, history, excellent teachers, except one. I decided to take a course in chemistry my junior year. The woman who taught it hated men, and why she taught them, that
boy.
She was a rush to get through the textbook, and she skipped and got to organic chemistry. The first chapter was paraffins, and she said, "Oh, it'll be useful for anything. I'll skip this chapter, because paraffins is the base of petrochemicals."
Right.
And so it went, and in New York State at that time, instead of SATs, I had Regents exam for each course, and I was really very high in my Regents test. I could skim through the courses. In fact, I went to Poly, my grades, and said, "This is going to be the same person. Your Regents are way up there, and your grades are savage." Well, I didn't have to study hard, but I could make the Regents, you know, 90s or high 90s, except my chemistry course. I ended up with a 75. That, I mean, was really sort of an insult that teacher couldn't do better for me, or I didn't do better. So in senior year, there was another course, an advanced course in chemistry, qualitative and quantitative analysis, taught by a teacher whose name I'll never forget, Philip Broadhurst. Small class, only about 10 of us, and he would visit with us, talk to us individually, mostly laboratory bench work.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him what he intended to do. And when he got to me, he asked, I said, "Well, I intend to be a civil engineer." He said, "Oh, that's a dull profession. You ought to be a chemical engineer." Now keep in mind, this is 1931, 32. I said, what's a chemical engineer? He was a rather new profession at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he explained to me, he'd gone to Brooklyn Polytechnic, studied chemical engineering, which was marrying chemistry and engineering. And for the very few jobs, so he was teaching. And he recommended that I go to Poly and study chemical engineering. Well, I'd always hoped to go to Cornell. I always liked that song about fighting with waters and the campus, but those were poor days, depression days. I thought I couldn't afford it, I couldn't. So I had to live at home and chose Brooklyn Poly. And that was a very, very wonderful recommendation of the school and the course. Poly at that time only had 400 day students and 400 evening students. And top grade faculty, and you received very personal attention. I entered what they called a February freshman, February 32. And it was arranged, came in as a February freshman in intensive instruction right through the summer and finished the freshman and sophomore years in a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
So I went through that, and as I do that, worked my way through. I studied days, I worked nights, and if I studied nights, I worked days.
What sort of work were you
doing? Well, I was doing anything I could do, an errand boy, janitor, some work under the whole NRA, National Reconstruction, 40 cents an hour, and I worked in the library, I swept the attic and the lab and so on.
There was a, when you were working with your father, was his business still going at that time?
He worked for other people.
Okay. And
he was a foreman and worked for other construction companies.
Right.
Well, he had his own business.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
That's a clarifying.
Yeah.
Well, in any event, I was broke every day of the week. I lived on 25 cents a day for coffee, 5 cents each way, 50 cents for lunch. And unfortunately, the Greek who had a restaurant near the school was very kind to the students. We got a big grocery sandwich and a chocolate milkshake for 25 cents. But that was a lot of money in those days. So I had to drop out after my sophomore year to try to find work. My father was unemployed because there was no construction work, and he was too proud to go to relief or sell apples on Sweet Corner. So I toured New York City on the subways and models. I covered hundreds of miles, but there were no jobs. I finally found a job locally in a small food shop. They called it a supermarket, it was a small market.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked 6.5 days a week, 72 hours, for $17 a week.
Wow.
But the fortunate thing was I would buy food at a reduced rate and bring the food home. I was the better in the family.
And was that your mother, your father?
Mother and brother.
And your brother.
My brother. So at the end of that year, I was ready to give up, but talked to my folks and hope that my dad had found a little work. If I had somebody to get back to school, I'd do so. So I went down to Poly, and I had become more acquainted in that first year and a half with Dr. Raymond Kirk, head of the chemistry department, one of the authors of Kirk Othmer. And he was a very open and friendly person, and it was unusual for the head of the Department of Chemistry. He insisted on teaching freshman chemistry himself. An excellent teacher. The only problem we had was that he called us chemical engineers, so we couldn't, we put our legs and using his Scottish brogue accent. But anyway, I went to see him, and he said, well, there's lots of kinds of jobs you can find. There's this NRA, but you're a chemical engineer, and you ought to see this new professor, Othmer, and get acquainted with him. The head of the department was John C. Olson, whom I had met briefly. I didn't know him too well at the time. So I went to see Albert, explained my situation. He said, okay, here's a broom, sweep the attic over the chemical engineering lab. And that's fine for me, as long as I could earn some money. He also found out anything about piping, and he had me working with the laboratory mechanic, Max was his name, fixing up the piping and the equipment and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was learning that pretty useful my hands and a hard worker. And like most of the students I found, well, many of them who had financial difficulties, he was always helpful. I applied for scholarships, there weren't many. There were some loans from Tom Bay to find the engineering fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
And I borrowed money. And things were hard up, but it's something you decide to have them do. I guess if this manager just stopped them and said, blood bought for your $10 or $20 bill, they pay you when you can.
Wow.
Go ahead. That's where he was. So by the time I got through my junior year. He helped me find summer work at a chemical company in Rolette, Pennsylvania, that he sold it for. Older ancient wood pyrolysis technology. And so while I was working at this company, I saw problems they had, and I worked out a solution, and that became the subject of my bachelor's thesis. And I think my bachelor's thesis was unique by the time it was written. The technology was being practiced commercially, successfully.
This is a
Gray Chemical Company.
Gray Chemical.
G-R-A-Y. Gray Chemical. Gray Chemical in Rolette, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Which Alpha resulted to. That's where I got the job. Little story. This is the special days. It's small town, so it was a boarding house. And for the boarding house, got nice bed and meals for $3 a week. There were two school teachers there also. And after I was there about a week, Dr. Osler came up to do some work and sat down at the dinner table. And the lady who ran this boarding house introduced him to the school teacher. This is Dr. Osler, a guest advisor. And loved it. Oh, a doctor! And he said, please, lady, not that kind of doctor. Now, you have to realize Don was a tall, handsome, dark haired fellow. Very attractive women. So, yeah, cut that off. But this was more of a fun time. The senior year, he would take me out on consulting trips. I went to New York State, where I sat and listened, as he was an expert witness, and listened to the discussion and testimony or deposition,
mm-hmm.
Words were taken. And I heard about this earlier, there was something broken, a line that fouled, and the fire, I suppose somebody was hurt. And I was listening with my knowledge of typing, I wrote a remote valve and gave it to him. And so he asked the question I raised, and that was a problem, there was a defective valve, and somebody finally broke it. So I was able to help him a little that way. But you learn by doing with him, which was what I thought was wonderful.
Were you unique
other students from year to year. He probably couldn't handle more than one student a year this way, but it discontinued. He was on for that. Some students didn't like the fact that he broke away so much doing consulting. Probably was unique to the college and plenty of their professors to do consulting.
Mm-hmm.
As I learned that way. Too many colleges limit their professors on outside contacts, except to do research work. So he would miss lectures and have substitutes come in to do lectures, and some students didn't care for that. But those of us who work with them, learn from them, learn an awful lot from a practical standpoint. So when I was graduating in June 36, my bachelor's degree, and I wrote my thesis of accomplished technology, there were very few jobs. And again, Alpha to the rescue. He was consulting with a small company up in the Bronx that developed a method of making cellulose acetate plastics with a new dip molding technique. And Alpha had worked with Eastman Kodak on this product. Cellulose acetate is a film or is a fiber.
Right.
This was a film product. So he got me the job. It was a very nice, interesting job. But after 2 months, the company went broke. I never collected a paycheck. So the got to depression days, and about June, that was only July or August, I felt for other work, there's no work, so I went to see Alvin and said, well, there's a graduate fellowship open, and you work for the master's degree, and tuition is free, and the stipend is around $250 a year. Of course, I was living at home, but $250 a year didn't go very far. But I started on my master's work, and at the end of the year, I just had to get out and earn a living. I just couldn't get along this way.
Thesis project were you pursuing then?
Okay.
Or were you just doing coursework during that?
At that time, you had to do a thesis for each degree.
Right.
And master's thesis was wood hydrolysis. Well,
okay.
This time when we finished, I didn't finish my master's.
Sorry.
I was short of two things, a plant design course and my thesis. I went to work for this company in northern Wisconsin, an Oxford chemical company.
Okay.
And immediately I had the title of chemical supervisor right out of school. A small wood chemical plant, and I worked for this type of plant in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
with me, we started, so I trained the operators and started up and had the thing running and started experimenting with some new products from wood. This stemmed out of the Forest Products Laboratory at the Department of Agriculture in Madison, Wisconsin, called Laboratory Technique to acid treat wood to make a plastic product.
Okay.
And this was the thing I was done. Madison studied the technology and built the first small pilot plant, which was a pipe coil and a hot oil bath. And some of the pictures of me working late at night reaming out the trunk of this tube. So I decided I would design my own pilot plant, continuous. So that design, I talked to Alton about it, and it was a good idea, became my plant design course. And then the research became my thesis. And Alton had to go to the board at Pauley to get permission, because I was the first student to do anything by correspondence. So that's where I finished my master's in 38 while working. So designing my pilot plant was my plant design course. That's since been published. And my research on the anthidiolysis has been published. So I started very early in researching and publishing.
Did was that government laboratory actively trying to get their laboratory finding out to commercial concerns?
That was the idea, yes.
Yeah.
These government research labs, now there are many more of them, but the Forest Products Lab was an early one that was very good. It was very, had very good people, scientists and engineers, developing new ideas for using wood.
Right.
And wood waste. But they could go so far and try to scale a little pilot work, but somebody in the industry had to take it over. And my employer that thought this was a good idea, sent me down there to study it, agreed with me, and spend money building the power plant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I wanted them to spend money to build a commercial plant. They didn't have it. The story was that the company owned by a family called the Reynolds family out of Marquette, Michigan, were quite well off. Grandpa had built a plastic powder plant in Upper Michigan, and somewhere in about the 1890s he sold it to DuPont and took DuPont stock rather than cash.
Okay.
So the family tradition was to always keep that stock, never sell it, keep it off the income. So that's why my research was limited to the funding commercial application. However, since I was inventing so much, I had a number of patents, which I assigned to the company. I owned 15% of the company before I was through.
Wow.
Along the line, I was pressuring so much, because they said, look, I always like to get a doctorate someday. We'll tell the doctorate to go to Pauley because afterwards our consultant would like to work with him. Well, I like that idea. On the other hand, I would have liked another school, but that's, I have to take it the way it goes. So I put Arthur over the phone and said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's go and see if we get some money, not just you, but for some master's students and bachelor's students. And I talked them to six fellowships, scholarships, in addition to my fellowship.
You talked Brooklyn into Northwood. Into funding you and sort of a team from the company together?
No, team of the students.
Okay.
The students at Pauley. There's lots of suggestions I worked with that with the company.
Okay.
But mine was a fellowship. I graduated from my doctorate.
Right.
And it was a scholarship student.
Okay.
Advanced their bachelor and master's theses.
And was Northwood's hope that they would get those students that they were funding?
Or get the technology.
Or get the, okay. Yeah.
Students, yes, that's who they needed them, but the main thing was get the technology that was developed.
Okay.
Well, the interesting part of that story was, Alton, of course, was all for it, but he had to get approval of the president of the university, Mr. Rogers, who was a civil engineer, as long as he fully understood chemical engineering, but I'd done it before briefly. He happened to be at a college president's meeting in southern Wisconsin, and Alton arranged to come out, and I came down in Madras to meet Craig C. and talk to him about this plan. And for some reason, when I mentioned the funding and my salary, he didn't seem to be too receptive. He was a little dubious about whether he wanted to go ahead with this. I was always an accounting character. If I got back to school my junior year, I took a great independent attitude. I had to work hard for everything and I'd go hard. I walked out of the meeting, and Alton and Prexy came running after me. And the grounds was, so the meeting was, and Prexy called me, it's all right, Ray, we'll work it out. It took me some time to find out. His problem was I was requiring a salary greater than that of an assistant professor. Through his own pay scale, but he had accepted. So I went back to Poly for 2 years, 1940 to 1942, and I had some graduate students and went straight through, like Joseph Jacobs.
Okay.
I taught him chemical engineering lab when I was doing my master's work. Then we were in, got a doctorate together. So he's one of my students, of which I'm very proud. In any event, I was looking for a research thesis, and I had an idea since I had worked with acetic acid as a product from the wood processing, that we could make it synthetically from natural gas.
Hmm.
And I had some ideas of the chemistry, and when I talked to Arthur about kind of the equipment we need to do it, a very sophisticated petrochemical practice.
Sure.
He said, well, you can't afford it. You have that kind of money. So, why don't you find some other ideas? So, it happened that fall I went to a meeting with the pulp industry called TAPI, Technical Association of Pulp and Paper Industry.
Okay.
At Commodore Hotel, New York. And the professor, Joseph McCarthy, not the infamous Joseph McCarthy, but the senator, the professor at Washington, University of Washington, gave a talk on why, when you bleach pulp, you got color formation from the pigment material. As he spoke, I just had a bright idea. And next morning, I was back in Brooklyn, and I went to my office, which I had a desk in Arthur's office. And I started dictating a patent application. I learned this from Arthur. He was called writing up patents. I dictated. And he came in and said, what are you doing, Ray? I said, I'm dictating a patent application. I got to get my thesis. Right now, and this was a good idea. And this was pulping without water.
Hmm.
And a solvent like methanol and chlorine. And so I could do that with conventional rice, where it wasn't very expensive.
Right.
And lo and behold, it worked. And I built a model of it. Through my faculties, I had two students work on byproducts, which came out of this, which were very interesting. Filed the patents through the companies, also, of course, own many patents.
Okay.
Patents issued very quickly on the process and the products. And just at that time, as I was getting my doctorate, Norfolk was acquired by Diamond Alkali Company in Painesville, Ohio. Diamond, of course, was in the chloralkali business, but they'd gotten into the plastics and got their intrigued with the technology that I had developed in Norfolk. So the board of Norfolk, so as soon as I got my doctorate, I was working with Diamond Alkali. And I was the technical director of the Norfolk Group.
Okay.
In the R&D section. And I was able to build a pilot plant for glass for creating the process. But the war was on. Nobody had an interest in improving the pulp industry right then. So another problem came up, making a product for the Navy, for the paraffins. And could I do this with my power plant? I said, sure. So I did, and within months, I went from a power plant to a full commercial plant, which I designed to make fluorinated paraffins for the Navy. These are paraffins my high school teacher
said
would ever react.
And what were they used for?
It wouldn't be accepted today, but if these were incorporated in paints for the Navy ships, and the fire started in one side of the bulkhead, the heat would cause this paint to foam and form an incendiary blanket.
Oh, wow.
It was quite an idea, and it worked. However, if that had gone further, I'm boiling it toxic fumes, so you wouldn't do it today. But
right.
This worked. And then another thing I developed was I had an idea of the technology I developed to make plastics from wood. I use a mild treatment of a plywood veneer with acid. I can make a much tougher veneer, so I fitted my pilot facility. I very nice setup at Diamond, and about six people working in my group. And I was able to make a very tough veneer, which could be made of plywood, and the military only used this for trainer planes. They couldn't afford to spend enough money to make them out of this plywood. So I was other wartime projects. So I was deep in wartime projects. At that time, during my second year at Diamond Alkali, the president of the company, Mr. Evans, got up and gave a talk at what's called Diamond Technical Association on the future of Diamond. And he made it very clear that the future of Diamond was in the chloralkali business, the conventional chemicals they did. And I could see there was not going to be any real interest in going into the chemistry we worked out in the products from the Norfolk group to the fall down. So I had previously, at the start of the war, applied for a commission in the Army for chemical warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in Wisconsin. An officer was sent up to interview me, and after looking at what I was doing, said, "We need you for the war. After you stay where you are." And so I didn't get into the Army, but when I saw Diamond closing things out, I was aware of something else going on, which was very secret, and that was the atomic bomb.
And how were you aware of
it? I was aware of it. Besides being interested in everything else at Poly, I loved physics. I had a perfect physics department. I took every course in physics up to my junior year and senior year. The only course remaining was atomic physics. So I put down my list of courses, went to the head of the department, John C. Olson. This before Arthur Weekend. John C. Olson was the old timer. And he said, "Cassian, you're trying to do too much." I went down the list. Atomic physics. What would a chemical engineer have to do with atomic physics? I said, "Well, Ralph, I agree I can't tell you just what I would do with it, but I want to take it. I've had every other course in physics. I want to pick up. It's my risk, let me take it." He said, "Okay, I've been the first two chemical engineers at Poly to study atomic physics, which is for physicists and some chemists."
Right.
And so, getting into that, I began to read the literature, and then I realized literature stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was being published. And then I began to get hints. My neighbor in Painesville was a government inspector, and he said to me, "I got another assignment. I'm supposed to be tracking down the movement of heavy water." "What's heavy water?" I said, "I'm not going to talk to you about it. I know what it is. In fact, I've heard Professor Urey of Columbia, who of course identified it, gave a lecture of Poly about this." And my father, who's in construction, worked on construction now, things have picked up.
Okay, yeah, sure.
There's a project down in Tennessee, and he called and said, "It's an odd setup. I'm in a compound. We can't get out more than once every few weeks, and special permit. I work in a building with some very odd walls, and can't figure out what it is." I said, "I think I know what it is, but I won't say anything because that's the end of the rock out." He's working on the gas distribution source for uranium oxide after suffering with an atomic bomb. Well, this all gave me a picture. Something's going on here. So I decided to leave. I decided to leave Diamond. I went to visit Union Carbide in New York City, and I had to go to 42nd Street at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they were involved in this operation my father was working in. So I went to see them and go to the Q room. I went to the Q room, and it was down to city because they couldn't tell me what they were doing, and I couldn't tell them I knew. But I turned my back to home and sent along my career, and I did mention atomic physics. And then he came that, so I decided to then apply for a commission in the Navy. And the Navy, I was in Painesville, 30 miles from Cleveland, the Navy had Office of Naval Officer of Procurement. So I went there, visited them, and they gave me a quick exam. And I saw the what specialties you had, and sure enough, they had atomic physics. I don't know that. Took this exam, and the yeoman comes and he rates it quickly. Takes it to the commander running out. "We've got to get you in a hurry. We've got to get you in." Because I'm going, "That's my finger at." This is the atomic bomb team.
Sure.
So he said, "However, you can't be an officer in the Navy and wear glasses." There's a book, Sight Without Glasses. Get it? Try it, see if you can pick it. Come back and pass the exam without glasses. "You've got to get your weight down 158 pounds. I was in 199 pounds right now. So, I resigned my job at Diamond. We had a small house in Painesville. Got my wife, my daughter's 1 year old, and prepared to go back to New York City to stay with our family. The house was for sale. And took this exercise, this high glass glasses, and just went to work. Within a month, I passed the exam on the glasses. Went back at the office in Cleveland. I said, "Okay, be prepared. We go in a month, we'll be going to Columbia University, we'll be going to Princeton." So they said, "Probably in Princeton, that's where the answer was." I said, "Fine." And just then I had a call from a company in Cincinnati called Wilkinson's, I was called, from a much complicated name, was the company that Arthur consulted for. They knew me through Arthur. And I was going to go and said, "We've got a contract to build a plane for the Defense Medical Corporation. involves acid hydrolysis of wood to make ethanol. Mm-hmm. And we know you can involve acid hydrolysis, whether you help us. And I can consult with you for 1 month and have to agree to release these